It's time for the PowerMizzou.com podcast with interviews and analysis of your Missouri Tigers. Now, here's your host, Gabe DeArmond.
All right, welcome back to another week of the PowerMizzou.com podcast. We're going to talk Mizzou, preview the Toledo game this weekend, because that's what we do, but we're going in reverse order this week. We're going to start with some other stuff from around the SEC and then come back to Missouri at the end, and we're going to start with the lone conference game of the weekend, and really the lone decent game of the weekend, and I'm not sure it's going to be that decent, but Ole Miss Vanderbilt, and we're going to talk to Neil McCready from Rebel Grove. .com covers the Rebels on a daily basis for the Rivals.com network. Neil, how you doing, man?
Gabe, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
All right, now I want to start. What I love about the SEC is that they always seem to have, you know, a game or two that's like among the headliners every single week. And I guess if there's a headliner this week, it's Ole Miss Vandy, but I don't think we've really got one this week.
No, I mean, this is probably the one it's the headliner. I mean, the number two game is probably Missouri-Toledo, so that tells you what kind of week it is.
Yeah.
We'll get some good games here soon. But, yeah, I mean, I guess because it's a conference game, you know, Ole Miss is nationally ranked. I guess it's got a little intrigue, but it's a real press.
Yeah, we'll talk about Ole Miss here in a minute. But one of my biggest takeaways from week one in the SEC was – James Franklin just can't be that important to a football program. I mean, you're looking at Vandy this week. What happened?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ole Miss played on Thursday night and finished up, and we're in the Georgia Dome, and you're, you know, finishing up your work, and I started kind of keeping an eye on Vanderbilt and Temple and could not believe the score, Gabe. That score just kept growing and kept growing and kept growing. And I got back to my hotel room, and I don't know about you, but I'm an insomniac half the time. It came on replay, and I watched a lot of it. They were bad. Yeah. And then on Saturday, you watch Penn State win, and you think, maybe Franklin's that good.
Maybe he really is. And I'll give you credit. I couldn't watch that game once. I'm impressed you watched it twice. I think I watched till it was about 14-7.
I knew I was going to have to talk about it, so I kind of watched it, and I kept thinking, surely this is fluky. And all week I've heard people say, well, you know, Vanderbilt turned it over seven times, and Vanderbilt did this, and Vanderbilt did that. Their quarterback play was awful. Their line play was bad. Defensively, they were okay in spots. Their kicking game was atrocious. They really missed Matthews at receiver. They didn't do much well, and, you know, I talked to Chris Lee on our podcast earlier this week. He said it was one of the three worst Vanderbilt losses he's ever seen. Think about how many games Vanderbilt's lost in the last 20 years. That's saying something.
They've got a couple to choose from. Now, on the flip side, the team you cover, you know, I didn't catch a ton of that game. You look at the final score, 35-13, and it looks like a dominating performance. Was it or not?
Working on trying to make sure that you're representing the institution in a positive way. I think our students
defensively, it was a pretty dominant performance.
Do a great job at that. But those types of stories, do you take a hit on that? Sure, you do. I think you'd be naive if you didn't think you did.
A collection of twos and threes, really, with them just kind of the game in hand.
I think that the higher you raise the visibility of Mizzou, and the higher you raise the visibility of athletics, which we have, certainly by levels of success academically and athletically, then I think you're going to invite more and more people to have an opportunity to have their opinion about what you're doing. But I think that goes along with it. We wouldn't want that any other way. We want to raise that visibility even higher. And if that means that we'll have more people asking us how we do things, why we do things, and the way we do it.
You don't win in this league playing, I think, one good quarter. You have to take that as a positive. 3.5 to 4.
Yeah, and you mentioned Bo Wallace and the three picks, and he's a guy that, I'll be honest, I'm fascinated to see what happens this year, because I don't know if, and I think, honestly, Matty Mock's gotten some of the same thing up here at Missouri. I don't know if it's because there just aren't really any established quarterbacks in the league outside of Marshall at Auburn, but you know, I feel like Matty Mock, Dak Prescott, Bo Wallace are these guys that are being built up as maybe the best quarterback in the SEC. And with all three of them, I really need to see it on the field before I'm going to believe it, because I'm not sure I ever have yet.
Yeah, I mean, Bo's had his moments. He's been a Jekyll and Hyde guy throughout his career, has made some shaky decisions. He did that again in the first half against Boise. He's made some big-time throws. He did that in the fourth quarter against Boise. He's got to become more consistent. He's healthier than he's ever been. He can make the throws. He can make good decisions. He just has to become more consistent. If he'll ever do that, he'll put up big numbers, Gabe.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't throw 2 and 3 picks a game. And if Ole Miss wants to do what Ole Miss says it wants to do, which is play meaningful championship games in championship implication games in November, with some of the games coming up in October, Bo's got to get this decision-making thing down pat.
How much of the – we're talking with Neil McCready about the Ole Miss Rebels. How much of the, you know, preseason hype and love for Ole Miss is based on this recruiting class that Hugh Freeze brought in a year ago, now having their feet wet? And are those guys the backbone of what this team thinks it can be?
Yeah. You know, but what's happened is that a lot of them, in fact, most of them have lived up to the hype. Robert Kimbici was just terrific the other night. Antonio O'Connor had a big hit, had an interception. Laquan Treadwell is one of the best receivers in the league. You know, Laramie Tunsil is an absolute bell cow at left tackle. Quincy Adebojo had a touchdown catch. He's in that class as well. Evan Ingram's been terrific, the tight end. They've gotten a bunch of help out of that class. It's the backbone of the program. They have people built around it. It's a good freshman class there. I don't think the expectations – I think they're overhyped. I don't think Ole Miss is winning the West. I do think it's realistic that they could make noise in the Western Division race. But, you know, I still think this is a program – when you take Ole Miss and you get past the Bo Wallace part of this program, yeah, he's gone at the end of this year, and they have to find a quarterback. They've got some candidates, but someone will have to step up and replace him at quarterback. He's really all they lose off this team. This should be has a chance to be a dominant team in a year. Right now, I think people are getting ahead of themselves.
Well, you kind of answered my next question, so I'm going to skip ahead one, and I'm looking at their schedule, and for those people listening that don't know, I mean, they should be 4-0. Boise, at Vandy, yeah. Louisiana, Lafayette, Memphis. They should finish their last three games, Presbyterian, at Arkansas, and the Egg Bowl. At least 2 wins, maybe 3. But I guess this is life in the SEC West. I can't imagine there is a more difficult 5-week stretch, by the way, without a bye. Alabama, at A&M, Tennessee, at LSU and Auburn. I mean, when Tennessee's your breather, that's just awful.
Yeah, that's life in the SEC West, man. Ole Miss is ranked 15th in the country in the AP poll right now. Do they deserve that? I have no idea. We'll find out as the year goes on. What's notable is that puts them a resounding 5th in the SEC West in the AP poll.
Unbelievable.
They're 15th, man. 15th, and they're 5th in their own division. It's something else. I mean, you know, I don't know how much you watched the Texas A&M and South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
Hill was terrific. Their offense was great. I mean, I was ready to hire Kevin Sumlin to just coach every NFL team after watching that game. you know, no one was talking about them in the preseason. If they're that good, and we'll find out. I mean, it's 1 week. People do this. I know this is the society we live in. It's fun. Everyone's the sweeping judgments after 1 week, after one quarter, after one series. I don't know what these teams are. A&M sure looked the part. You know, if you throw them in the mix with LSU and Alabama and Auburn, if you're Ole Miss trying to overcome all of them, it's an awfully daunting task. I will say this. Ole Miss, I agree with you, will be 4-0 when Alabama comes here October the 4th. This place will be a zoo. It'll be the biggest home game Ole Miss has played since Eli Manning's last game in Oxford, November of 2003.
I might just drive down and hang out in the Grove for that one. I don't know who Missouri plays, but I think I'd rather be there.
This is what I was telling somebody. This is funny. I said this on my podcast the other day. I've been saying this for weeks. They're going to be 4-0. That's going to be the, quote, game of the century. Just for kicks, Gabe, and I think Alabama will win. Let me say that. But just for kicks, let's say Ole Miss wins, all right? Just for fun.
Okay.
Ole Miss beats Alabama, gets to 5-0. That would put them at about 6th, 7th in the country, probably.
Mm-hmm.
They would turn around the next week and quite possibly go play undefeated 2nd or 3rd-ranked Texas A&M
so
in College
Station. So for the next 4 or 5 years,
Ole Miss's
really
game of the century could be superseded by a new game of the century 7 days later.
You know, that's funny because I spent all last year saying that and answering questions. Is this the biggest game Missouri's ever played? And I said, yeah, unless they win. And then next week's the biggest game they've ever played. I mean, it's funny. It's funny how that works. I'll let you out of here on this. I'm not going to ask you a prediction for Vanderbilt because I think we both think it's going to be pretty comfortable. But you say Ole Miss isn't going to win the West, so out of all those teams at this point in time, I mean, Alabama underwhelming, A&M overwhelming, who do you think is the favorite?
Well, I watched Auburn's backup quarterback look better than the starter, and the starter looked awfully good. First half, their defense was underwhelming. Second half, it was pretty good. It was Arkansas. I don't know what Arkansas is. Auburn's schedule is just brutal. I wasn't blown away by LSU. I still go Alabama, though I'm with you, and I won't be shocked if it's A&M. And then as I sit here and say it, I won't be shocked if it's Ole Miss. I think the West is wide open. I don't think it's going to be as good as everyone thinks it's going to be right now. Because
I think a really good
turnout
sure
any
for
of these teams
game.
Are going
I
to
think
be
over
dominant.
Labor Day weekend, if you this, look at this,
they're all good.
Plus
State's
crowd.
Good.
That would
Arkansas
be like the second largest opening day crowd for Labor Day in Columbia that we've
they
had in about
look
the last
a little
20 years.
Bit more like
the other
one
crowd
of his teams
was,
the other
believe,
day.
The
yeah, this year might be Mike's life's worst nightmare.
So
you might have about five teams sitting 9-3
really,
at the end of the
even
year.
Before that, was
you know
the
what? You really could, and you look in the
had.
East, South Carolina's not dominant. I mean, I think Georgia's going to whack South Carolina. And then, you know, I still think Florida's good. I think people are sleeping on Missouri. Tennessee is significantly better than they were a year ago.
Kentucky.
I know it was one game, but they looked better. Kentucky's better. I don't know that they're better enough. Vandy looks bad. I think it's a Mike Slav nightmare. I think it's a real possibility that no team from the SEC makes the 4-team playoff and that we look up and at the end of the year, there's a whole bunch of 2- and 3-loss SEC teams that are winning bowl games.
Well, that's a fantastic thing to end up with. And, Neil, I think if that happens, the college football playoff may go away after 1 year.
Well, I'll tell you this, Gabe. That bad boy's expanding to 8 faster than anybody in that. I listen. You were at Media Days, too, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you hear Hancock, and I'm not making fun of Hancock. He's a nice guy, and he just was spewing the company line about, no, it won't expand. We have a contract. Yeah, well, you know what they say about contracts. That thing's going to 8 teams, and it's going to 8 teams fast. This debate that we're going to have in a couple of months about who should be number 4 and how is number 4 different from number 5 is going to be, in my opinion, so obnoxious and so ludicrous. And a lot of people are going to be able to look at it. Let's say, you know, teams that you and I cover, maybe they're not in the mix, but the fan bases of Missouri and Ole Miss and places like that are going to look at that and go, how pissed would I be if we were in this mix?
Absolutely.
And this thing's going to 8 because the debate at who should be 8 and 9 will be far different than who should be 4 and 5. Because if you're 8, you probably have 2 or 3 losses. And people are like, well, if you hadn't choked that game away and for the, you know, and the diehards will be upset about it, but most people won't be offended. I'm not afraid. I don't care. I there's no doubt in my mind that there is going to be a rightfully offended team, administration, coaching staff, fan base come early December that is finished number 5. And the difference between number 5 and number 4 is essentially nothing and is probably the product of a schedule that was made 6 or 7 years ago. I think that's going to happen and it's going to be obnoxious. And while I hate to use the word victim in anything that pertains to college athletics because it's, you know, there aren't really any victims, someone's going to get screwed out of an opportunity that they probably deserved.
I find it hilarious that you think somebody wouldn't complain about being number 9. We spend 4 days after Selection Sunday complaining that the 69th best team in America didn't get in the tournament.
We do, but everyone knows that team's not going to win the damn thing. You know what I mean?
You're right. I agree with
that. They belong in the tournament, and everybody has that debate. A lot of times that debate's pretty half-hearted. And it's about, well, they played this schedule, and their RPI is this. there's going to be a team, Gabe, that gets left out that very well could very easily, had they gotten in, win the thing. You know, that team that's left out of the last 12 seed, they're not winning the NCAA tournament.
Right.
Maybe they think they deserve to get in and they wanted the trip to Spokane, but nobody thinks they're going to win the tournament. There's going to be a team left out of this thing that really had a chance to win the tournament.
Absolutely. It's going to be a ball. And, Neil, appreciate your time, man. Great stuff. We'll catch up with you down the road, probably the week that we get that top 10 Alabama-Ole Miss showdown.
I'll be happy to do it. Thanks, Gabe.
All right, have a good one. All right, from the SEC West, back over to the SEC East. And in my opinion, probably the SEC East team that made the biggest impression in week one, the Tennessee Volunteers. We're talking to Brent Hubbs from VolQuest.com. Brent, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Not too bad. That a fair statement? Tennessee probably made the biggest statement in the East week one?
Oh, I don't know. Georgia was pretty good in the second half of that
football game
against Clemson. I think Gurley pronounced himself Heisman Trophy candidate and maybe the best back in the country. But I think Tennessee overall probably surprised some people with the way they played in the first week against Utah State. You know, the improvement of speed on defense, the efficiency of Justin Worley as a quarterback at 71% with a completion ratio. So while maybe not the most impressive, probably the most surprising team when you look at what the rest of the East did last week, with South Carolina laying an obvious egg, Vanderbilt laying an obvious egg, Kentucky against a team that's not very talented in UT Martin, and then obviously Georgia we talk about. I thought Tennessee and Georgia certainly made the biggest impressions in the Eastern Division in a positive way.
Most unbelievable number I saw in week one is that Butch Jones played 21 true freshmen. Does that say more about the way Butch is recruiting or about the way Derek Dooley left this program?
Wow, I think it's both. You don't play 21 freshmen unless you have to play 21 freshmen, so you probably put it more on Derek Dooley and where this program was. When you look at this program since Butch Jones arrived, they've had over 120 roster moves since he's been here. Now, that includes walk-ons, but that includes walk-ons coming and going, seniors graduating, newcomers coming in and signing classes, transfers, those types of things. That's an enormous amount of roster moves in a short period of time, less than 2 years. Butch Jones has really flipped this roster. The result is a more talented roster, but a young roster that's going to learn a lot of lessons under the fire as we move forward. But everybody wanted to see that freshman class Sunday night, and they got a good showing of them with 21 of them on the field.
And a team that's going to get younger. Didn't I see one of their starting offensive tackles now out for the year?
Yeah, they lost a senior walk-on offensive tackle, Jacob Gillum, who was making his first career start as a fifth-year senior. So he wasn't the most veteran guy in the world in terms of playing time. But he is injured and gone for the year with a torn ACL. They'll now turn to potentially newcomer Dontavius Blair, a junior college transfer who enrolled in January and ironically did not play in the game on Sunday night, or a guy by the name of Brett Kendrick, who's in his second year in the program at the left tackle position. Or they could flip the right tackle to left tackle to start a true freshman there. So, yes, to answer your question, they're going to get younger this week on the offensive line.
Yeah, the fifth-year senior may not have been a veteran, but by virtue that he can find the dining hall, he's a veteran in Knoxville this time of year. I don't want to spend too much time on Arkansas State. I mean, Tennessee's going to win this game pretty easily, aren't they?
I think if Tennessee's focused and takes care of business early and doesn't let Arkansas State hang around, then yes, I think they'll be fine. The challenge for Tennessee this week is on the defensive side of the ball. We saw all the speed once the ball was snapped. The challenge will be, what does that speed look like pre-snap this week? Because Arkansas State still has the Gus Malzahn influence. They want to play fast. They want to play Oregon-type fast. They want to snap the ball with 25, 30 seconds left on the play clock. They sprint to the line of scrimmage after every play. Tennessee's defensive adjustments will have to be good. Their communication will have to be really crisp. And they probably will not be able to substitute situationally as much as they did in the opener.
All right, I just got done talking to Neil McCready, and I said I'm not sure anybody in the country has a tougher five-week stretch than Ole Miss. And then I opened Tennessee's schedule after this week. At Oklahoma, at Georgia, the rivalry with Florida, Chattanooga, which is easy, at Ole Miss, Alabama, at South Carolina. I mean, I guess the danger is a young team loses those first couple kind of badly and doesn't know where to turn?
Well, I mean, the thing about this team this year is, and the coaching staff has mentioned it, I've been writing for a year since everybody's been waiting on Jalen Hurd and all these guys to arrive. The thing about this season is not as much wins and losses. It's about their improvement throughout the season. And I don't want to sound like a coach here because that's not my job and that's not what I do. But, look, they're not going to go to Oklahoma and win. You talk and run through that stretch of games you just mentioned. Where's the win at? I mean, where do they steal one from? Florida at home? We don't know what Florida looks like yet. Yeah, they'll beat Chattanooga. But it's really difficult to go to Oxford, Mississippi against that team and win with where they are right now. So I think the thing for this Tennessee team is how much better are they the start of November compared to where they are when they go to Norman, Oklahoma?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they may lose ball games in there, but how much better does Hurd get? How much better do those young secondary guys get? How much better does Derek Barnett, Dwayne Hendricks get off the edge as defensive ends? What about this young offensive line? They're going to take growing pains. They're going to take their lumps. But are they improving in doing that, or are they just getting beaten down to the point that they don't get any better? And the challenge for this coaching staff is going to be to continue their development while they're taking their lumps. That's not always easy to do, but to me that's the judgment of this football team coming through Butch Jones' second year at Tennessee.
Talking with Brent Hubbs, VolQuest.com. A couple more for you, Brent. The way it was put to me, and I think this is as good as I've heard, Tennessee's probably not a threat to win the SEC East, but they may very well have a say in who wins it. You think that's fair?
Well, it depends on their improvement. I mean, that they could be a team that come late October, November. You're not real sure if you want to play Tennessee if they stay healthy and if they improve. Now, the health part is a real concern, because particularly in the line of scrimmage, and that's why the Gillum injury at left tackle hurts them so bad. They just don't have the numbers they need to have at the defensive interior, and they don't have the numbers that they need to have with the experience on the offensive side of the ball in the line of scrimmage. So if they can stay healthy, then they may be a problem for some people. But they have to stay healthy in places it's hard to stay healthy, and that's in the line of scrimmage where guys get beat up. So that'll be the big challenge for this team. The other thing is what we don't know, what we will not learn in week two, we also didn't learn it in week one, and I think we'll learn it a little bit at Oklahoma, but then you'll learn it against Georgia for sure. That how is Tennessee against the run when somebody lines it up and runs it right at them? That they're playing spread team in Utah State, who wants to flip it out wide and kind of play in the open field because they don't think they're physical enough. You know, same thing with Arkansas State this week. Oklahoma's a spread team. I worry about this Tennessee team and their say in the SEC East when somebody says, you know, a coach says, hey, we're going to give it to the tailback 20 times, and we're going to run off tackle, and we're just going to keep hitting and see if Tennessee can respond to it. Does Tennessee have enough depth, enough ability in the defensive interior to hold up against teams that come right at them? I don't think we're going to know that for a few more weeks, but that is a huge, huge question mark and a huge test for this team.
All right, last thing for you, and trust me, I learned my lesson covering a team last year that came out of nowhere about counting wins and losses too early, but if we're looking at the schedule, Tennessee's going to beat Arkansas State. They're going to beat Chattanooga. They ought to beat Vanderbilt. So they've got three home games, Florida, Kentucky, Missouri. Is that what this season comes down to, those three games? I mean, I know you've talked more about improvement than wins and losses, but I've got to think if Butch Jones can find a way to win two of those games and win six and play in, you know, some bowl game I've never heard of, that is unbelievably successful.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the next step for this team. You know, they fell short of a bowl last year. They should have gone to a bowl game last year, and they would have if Justin Worley had not gotten hurt. I think they would have beaten Vanderbilt and Knoxville and gotten to that sixth win, but they couldn't finish that game off. But, yes, I think if this team can get to six, it says a lot about the development, because to get to six, they're going to have to, quote, steal one somewhere. I think they're better than Kentucky. That game's in Knoxville. I think they'll beat Kentucky right now. And I think Kentucky's improved, but I don't think they're that improved. So I can find their five wins, I think, pretty clearly right now. Then it becomes, can they steal one? Are they far enough along in their development to steal one against Florida, who, again, we haven't seen yet? And there's some obvious turmoil going on down there right now. Can they still win against the Missouri team that we're still trying to figure out a little bit? And look, I know it was the opening game. Everybody played pretty close in some opening games. But you know, Missouri's still in search of some receiving playmakers, but they can flat out run the football. How much better is Missouri, you know, in November than they are right now? And how much better is Tennessee in November than they are right now? You know, those are question marks we don't know. But I think the guess for Tennessee is you can see them get to 5 wins without too much of a stretch. And then the question becomes, can they steal one somewhere between Florida, Missouri, a trip to South Carolina if the wheels come off over there, which I'm not saying they will. Where's that elusive sixth win going to come from is the question everybody has right now.
All right, Brent, going to be fun to follow, man. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks a lot. Brent Hubbs, volquest.com. And there you go, folks. A little from the SEC West, a little from the SEC East. We're going to try to do that every week. And now we're going to turn our attention back to Columbia and the Missouri Tigers. Happy to welcome back to the podcast after a smashingly successful debut last year, Stephen St. John, 810 WHB, Kansas City, taking the Royals off day to talk Mizzou football with us. What's up, Stephen?
What's going on, Gabe? How you doing, man?
Not a whole lot. All right, I'm ready. Big sweeping judgments after the South Dakota State game. What'd you think?
You know, I mean, I think most everyone was a little concerned about what they saw. You know, while you're still celebrating the first touchdown, then you see the defense give up a 75-yard score in the first place in scrimmage. But I thought the defense, I think it looked pretty good. I mean, I like what I saw from Gold. I like what I saw from Ray. But I saw questions about the secondary, and I thought that at times the offensive line was a little leaky. That concerned me a little bit. And then, of course, Matty Mock, that would be the biggest thing I took away from it. You know, it looks like he's going to be a guy that can make big plays. We knew that. But I guess I was hoping for more consistency, a little bit better accuracy, and he didn't look much different from the quarterback from last year, which, you know, that's not all bad, but I don't know, maybe I was hoping for him to look like Chase Daniel did when he finally took over at that first game as a starter where he was lights out, and that first game where Gabbert was a starter against Illinois and how good he looked. I wanted to have that feeling after watching him, and I didn't.
All right, now, I know that you tend to get into games, so let's be honest. You broke something when South Dakota State scored, and it was 21-18, didn't you?
I was mad. I was mad because I was watching the game with my boys. We'd started off with a Buffalo Wild Wings, and then just at halftime, I was pissed. And there's some Nebraska fans like sitting off to the left and some other people. And, you know, you can kind of hear some maize oil. And I told my buddy's hat. And my son tried to, I got to get out of here. I'm going home. Because, you know, at that time, I was like 35 to 10. And I was just be laughing and eating wings. But that wasn't the case. And so, yeah, I went home to buckle down for the second half. And I'm glad that I was at home when it became 21-18. But you know what, then Marcus Murphy took care of business, and they ended up winning by 20, but still, that was a little bit too uncomfortable for me against South Dakota State.
On the positive side, though, you could actually watch this game on your television. I was floored last week when I found out there were still a couple of Big 12 games on pay-per-view. I'm assuming at this point over on your side of the state, there isn't much more why did Missouri make this move, right?
I think just if people are just don't care if they're wrong and they just want to be stubborn and try to argue against why Missouri went. But no, hey, look, I in plenty of years I bought a game like this on pay per view. Wasn't happy about it, but I did it because I wanted to watch, and maybe it was the time when I couldn't get down to the game or whatnot. But yeah, pretty nice to have that game on when you slip it on and not worry about pay per view or having to go to a certain bar because you didn't have the channel. And, you know, and I'm fired up about the Toledo game being on ESPN. So, yeah, I mean, that's awesome. And I'm excited about the SEC Network and to see where that takes things.
The Toledo game brings up kind of, I have been vocal about this. I can't stand Missouri's non-conference schedule. At Toledo, Central Florida, Indiana, three teams that on the right day can probably beat you, but you don't really gain any. I mean, I can see Missouri being 4-0 in this non-conference schedule and still being ranked like 20th, 21st because they just haven't beaten anybody. What do you think about these four games to start the season?
I don't mind the Central Florida game. I kind of like that, especially them winning a BCS Bowl last year. And I think they got enough of a national rep where a loss to them wouldn't kill you. But I think a lot of people are assuming that they're not going to be quite the same without Blake Bortles. But, I mean, I watched most of the second half of that game against Penn State that they had in Dublin. I thought they looked really good, and they were damn close to pulling off a really good win against Penn State in that game. So I think it's yeah, I don't mind a game like that. Indiana, I don't know that they could beat Missouri. I guess it's from last year. I psyched myself up. It was going to be such a big game at Indiana, and Missouri worked them. I got to remember this is Missouri from last year. This is a different Missouri team. But the game that bothers me is Toledo, going to Toledo. And I know that I heard Petro on the show today chastising Missouri fans for being nervous about this. Missouri fans need to have swagger. I'm 41. I don't think I'm going to get swagger anytime soon before I die. So I'm going to be nervous about this. And I don't like Missouri playing at Toledo and it being 11 a.m. I do a new Missouri SEC show on WHB on Wednesdays. We're running at 7 o'clock right now, but I think we'll push it to 6 after baseball season. But T. Rucker, Tommy Saunders, and Steve Rubin do the show with me, and they all said last night that they don't like 11 a.m. kickoffs. They don't like them on the road, and it's going to be just a weird environment, a weird atmosphere to go in there and play a tough Toledo team. So that game right there is what I don't like, Gabe.
All right. I listened to your guys' station seriously like all day long, and I didn't know about this show. So for people listening, tell us about the show on Wednesdays and how they can find it.
Well, we just it was kind of an idea that I had with Steve Redman, the former linebacker at Mizzou, and he's a personal trainer now. I work out with him at a place called Core Athletic down in Riverside. And I knew that Tommy Saunders worked out there, and so did T. Rucker. And, you know, whenever we work out, I go work out and we talk Mizzou football. And I just thought, you know, it'd be a pretty good show. And then get those guys in there just once a week and talk about the game the district plays, preview the next game, and kind of use their experiences to talk about what this Missouri team's going through throughout the season. And so we kind of hatched that idea. We're going to do it on Wednesdays. It's going to be an hour long. And like I said, it was on at 7 o'clock last night. So I think, wow, baseball season's still going on. It'll be at 7. But it'll either be at 6 or 7 every Wednesday. And it's just us four talking Missouri football. And we had a guest. We had the Toledo play-by-play man on last night. So we usually have one guest. But I just thought that, especially with how good Missouri played last year and where that program is in the SEC, I think they deserved an hour-long show once a week on our station. And I'm glad they're letting me do it.
And people, if they're not in Kansas City, that'll be on the website too at 810WHB.com?
Yeah, and if you missed the show last night, it's already on our podcast page at 810WHB.com, and you can listen to what T-Rock, Tommy Saunders, and Steve Redman have to say.
All right, you said that it's going to be at 7 as long as baseball season's going on, so I hope you stay at 7 for a long, long time, Steven. Like at least another month.
You asked me how mad I get during how mad I got during the Missouri game. I mean, I'm not used to this. Like when the Royals won the World Series, and I was 12, and you know I'd get mad, but I wouldn't do much damage. But you know you forget baseball's every night. Cardinals fans understand what we're talking about. I mean, you're going through this high intensity, nerve wracking game instead of once a week for football every night. And if you're out of practice doing it in baseball, man, it'll wear you out. I mean, I was over the weekend against the Indians. I think I lost 3 years off my life. It was awful.
I told some of my friends that are Cardinal fans, and I don't want Missouri fans to get too mad at me talking to Royals for very long, so I won't. But I told them, I said, I don't know how you do this every year. Like, I feel like I'm going to puke watching some of these games. So I don't know if I can handle this for another 3 weeks.
Well, I can tell you this. I have no idea what I'm going to do or how I'm going to handle it on Sunday when you got the Chiefs and the Titans kicking off the season at noon and at 12:05. Royals and Yankees in Yankee Stadium, game three of that series, I think my head will just explode.
All right, back to Missouri. What do you think, man? I mean, South Carolina just looked awful. I think Georgia has to be the favorite, but what's your take on the SEC East?
I mean, I was shocked at how bad South Carolina looked. I mean, to a lesser extent, I didn't think anyone had that high expectations for it. I was stunned at how bad Vanderbilt looked. And I mean, they lost James Franklin. It looks like that program's done. And boy, bring up T. Rucker again. He made a really good point. He said it reminds him of when, and under different circumstances, of course, but reminds him of when Mangino left Kansas. He took him to a certain point, and then he left, and that program went to crap. And he thinks that that's going to happen with Vanderbilt without James Franklin. So that'll be interesting. But Georgia looked fantastic. South Carolina looked awful. Tennessee looked good, but I'm not sure what to take away from that game. And we still haven't seen Florida. I mean, I feel better about Missouri's chances of winning at South Carolina. I certainly think that could happen. That feels more realistic to me than it did before I watched that game. But I think Georgia is going to be better than people think, because I think Todd Gurley has a chance to be the best running back in the entire nation, and he is just a monster.
Yeah, he's unreal. All right, I know you're going to have me do this tomorrow morning, so I'm going to ask you now, this weekend, what's the score?
Mm-hmm. 31-20, Missouri.
All right, I think everybody would be okay with that.
And it's a late touchdown from Toledo to make it look better. It'll be 31-13 late, and they'll score a touchdown, and everyone will get mad.
All right, good deal, Stephen. Appreciate you taking some time, man. We'll talk to you.
Anytime. Go Mizzou. Thank you very much. Gave the Army.
All right, buddy. Have a good one. There you go again, folks. Wednesday nights, there you go, 7 o'clock, 810WHB.com. Martin Rucker, Tommy Saunders, Steve Redman, Stephen St. John. It's a lot of Mizzou on microphone for you. So take 1 hour away from Power Mizzou sometime during the week. You can listen to that. You can download the podcast. That's what I work out to every day. 810 podcast is very exciting. I know it gets me fired up. But Mizzou-Toledo, 11 a.m. kickoff Saturday morning, ESPN. I will make the same announcement that I make every week. It is on ESPN. I do not know what channel that is on your particular television. Hit the button that says guide. You'll probably be able to find it. Pete Scantlebury is taking off for Detroit tomorrow. He will be in Toledo covering the game. We will be at all 12 Missouri football games this year. And imagine next week we're back here talking about 2-0 facing 2-0 Missouri facing Central Florida. But let's wait and see. I don't know if trap game's right, but definitely one that Missouri better be ready for going into the Glass Bowl and Gary Pinkel's old stomping grounds. Way to finish strong with the pronunciation there. We'll be back next week.